Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's August 19th. Currently 61 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 60 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Wasatch Back forecast as we go throughout your Tuesday. We're looking at mostly sunny skies. It is going to be a hot one out there, folks, so make sure you are staying hydrated. We're looking at those temperatures climbing into the lower 90s for us in Park City this afternoon. High temperatures will climb into the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. Don't forget that sunscreen, SPF 15 or greater, you could burn in less than 15 minutes with that high, very high UV index throughout the afternoon. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we start to see some small changes. We'll call it mostly sunny to partly sunny skies for our Wednesday afternoon. Temperatures very similar to what we're going to be looking at this afternoon with highs in the low 90s in Park City. We'll see those highs back into the mid-90s there in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your Thursday, we're going to call it partly cloudy skies, and we're going to start to introduce that chance of some of that monsoon moisture sneaking into the area. So we'll call it isolated showers and thunderstorms popping up on your Thursday afternoon in or near the area. High temperatures in Park City will be around the 90-degree mark with low to mid-90s for the Heber Valley. Moving into your Friday, more of the same, partly cloudy skies, isolated showers and storms in the area, highs in the mid to upper 80s in Park City, highs into the low to mid 90s there for us in the Heber Valley. Now, as we move into the weekend, I actually think we see an increased surge of that moisture moving towards the area. So we're looking at a better chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms moving into the region as we go towards your Saturday and Sunday afternoons. That means those temperatures for highs will come down even more as we get towards the weekend as well. So high temperatures as we get into your Saturday, only in the mid-80s in Park City, only around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. And as we get into your Sunday, we're going to be talking about highs only around 80 in Park City with highs in the mid-80s. That's it for us as we get into the Heber Valley. We're going to keep that chance, a decent chance, of scattered showers and storms in your forecast heading into the beginning of next week. Highs may only not even get out of the upper 70s in Park City with highs in the low to mid-80s for the Heber Valley. That's a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh with a preview of tomorrow's County Council meeting. From the Utah chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, Executive Director Stacy Culp, along with Board Chair and Parkite Ken Barfield, with details on this year's Walk to End Alzheimer's and how you can participate. And finally, from Recycle Utah, Education Director Mary Closser, along with Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer, with an update on the green business programs and some upcoming events. Taking a look at some local news now. The Central Heber Overlay Zone is meant to promote more mixed-use development and infill housing downtown. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the Heber City Council could adopt that new zoning at its meeting tonight.
The proposed changes have been in the works for over a year as part of the city's Envision Heber 2050 goals for a revitalized downtown area. If approved, the new zone would replace the residential, commercial, and neighborhood infill overlay zones. City Manager Matt Brower has said the primary goal of the zone is to give downtown homeowners more flexibility. The Central Heber Overlay Zone would enable property owners to create flag lots or other accessory dwelling units on large lots. And it would allow for small amounts of mixed-use development with commercial spaces downstairs and apartments upstairs. Flag lots break one big piece of land into two properties, with one long driveway leading to the back property, creating a flag-like shape. Accessory dwelling units are small detached homes or apartments, often in the backyard of a single-family home. The changes would apply to the section of Heber between 500 North and 600 South, and between the 100 block and the 600 block, both east and west of Main Street. At the City Council meeting Tuesday, council members will discuss the zone in the work session at 4 p.m. If they arrive at a consensus, they will vote on whether to make the changes official during the regular session at 6 p.m. City leaders are still trying to decide the correct approach for downtown rental properties. Council members could require all leases within the zone to be for a minimum of a month, 6 months, or a year. That's one of the issues they'll discuss during Tuesday's meeting. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock, and on the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
Looks like a pretty short meeting. Something that caught my eye, though, on the agenda is the council just approved a new e-bike ordinance. One council member says it already needs to be revisited. So what's the problem?
So one of the things that we've been working towards is having uniformity in the three major jurisdictions in Wasatch County on these e-bike regulations. That's Wasatch County, Heber City, and Midway City. One of the areas in which we didn't align, and there are a few other minor ones, was on the use of scooters on public trails. The Wasatch County originally proposed that we would not permit scooters on trails, but because we have these interconnections, it would mean that you could use scooters on certain trails and have to walk across others. So what the proposal is to uniformly allow electric scooters on public trails.
So any other changes other than that?
No, not as far as I'm aware.
All right. At 6 o'clock, a public hearing to consider an ordinance allowing certain land uses on non-conforming lots of record. So what does this mean?
So we have a few circumstances around the county where there are properties that would be able to do a certain conditional use. And a conditional use is something that someone has a right to do, but subject to certain conditions. But what a non-conforming lot means that if a lot was created prior to our land use rules around the sizes of lots, it's possible that they don't meet the same permissions that other properties do. So in some cases, it could be that a lot is under a certain size. So in our P160 zone, for instance, we have several lots that are under 160 acres. And those might have legally been created at the time that they were created, but now are considered non-conforming. What this code would do is basically allow, under certain circumstances, if you were to acquire enough property that it would be conforming or meets those certain criteria, that you're allowed to use those conditional uses. So if you span a use across multiple lots that otherwise would be conforming, then it basically allows you to proceed. So,
yeah. So why is this being considered?
You know, we just have, I think, had a few instances of a lot that's, you know, 154 acres and it's only 5 acres short, and otherwise they have additional property that is part of a given project, that we felt like it is more equitable to be able to allow it in these circumstances where it makes sense. You know, if you have two lots that add up to 250 acres, should you not be able to do the same things if you had a single 160 acre lot?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, I mean, was the item added because of the lawsuit filed against Wasatch County by Maverick Rock back in July?
This process started before that lawsuit was filed, so I don't believe that it was in response to that.
Yeah, and one of the mining company's complaints was that the county refused to schedule a public hearing about its request to mine in Daniels Canyon. So why didn't their request get put on the agenda?
I think that's a little bit different matter in that their request was to move a lot or move a mine from Utah County and claiming that it is the same mineral trend into Daniels Canyon and be exempted from any of the conditional use or other approvals. And the county's position was that this did not represent the same mineral trend and therefore we weren't required to hold a public hearing on this item.
Okay, and so the specific proposed changes are what as part of this public hearing?
It really is just at a high level. It's permission to be able to use conditional uses in a zone that otherwise you might have been prohibited because the lots were non-conforming. If you can use multiple non-conforming lots or a non-conforming lot with a conforming lot, then it allows you to use those conditional uses.
Okay. There are apparently two special meetings going to be happening during the council meeting for Parks and Recreation and Solid Waste Special Service Districts. What sort of changes are being planned here?
So in both of these instances, the county council has asked for both of these districts to kind of be integrated more fully into the county operationally. And so in an effort to do that and work more closely together with these two countywide districts, the council is going through the process of appointing the county manager, myself, as the executive director over those districts so that we can work more closely with them. We have, in both cases, kind of a little bit of a mixing of duties in that the county owns many of the properties that these districts operate. They operate them, and we kind of have to have very clear lines of who does what. And sometimes it creates a little bit of a tension of who's responsible for what. And I think this change allows us to be able to proceed together in a lot more you know, in a more united fashion.
All right. Well, I sound like a broken record, but still interested in where we are with the sheriff's office investigation. Has the judge finished his report?
He's indicated that he's in the process of drafting the final report now. And so I don't have the report from him yet, but I think that we are getting close. So I feel a lot more confident now that I do know that we are, I would guess, just a couple weeks out from getting a final report.
All right. And what's this costing the county to have this report done?
I don't have the numbers at hand, and there is a cost, but I think we feel like it's worth the cost. We knew going into this that we wanted to be thorough and independent and hired someone with credentials sufficient that they could be thorough and independent and objective as they investigated this matter. And I think the fact that the number of people that he was able to interview speaks to the confidence at least those people had in his abilities. And we think that public trust is something we take very seriously. And so having money spent on this project, you know, it's in excess of $10,000. I know that. We think it's worth that money to ensure that we are following all proper procedures and addressing all these matters in a sufficient manner.
Okay, safe to say less than $20,000, though?
Again, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you exactly. But I will be able to answer that once the report is done, because we've been billed monthly since it started, and so I obviously haven't received August's bill yet or anything like that. So
all right,
we'll have a final number at the end of the project.
All right, and I know we've talked about this. You say that the report will go to the county council in a closed session, but at what point does it get made public, and how much redaction would there be?
You know, it kind of depends on the nature of the report. If there are things in there that are not subject to information requests, those portions probably would be redacted. But to the extent that it's otherwise, not protected information as outlined in state code, I think that we expect those reports to be made available.
All right. Another topic related to the sheriff's office are these 287G agreements with ICE. The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office has signed an agreement to work with ICE by serving immigration warrants within the jail. So were you aware of the agreement before it was finalized?
We're in discussions right now with the Sheriff's Office of, you know, the impacts of these types of agreements and our best path forward. And I don't really have a lot to share at the moment. I'm meeting with the sheriff, I believe later today, if things work out, to discuss some of these things. But
okay, well, that sounds like a no. And is that because the sheriff considers himself a separate office and not under the purview of the county manager or council?
I mean, state code does grant elected offices a high degree of autonomy. I'm actually prohibited by state law from managing directly the executive functions of their offices, but we largely coordinate on a wide range of issues, and we provide a lot of services. And so that's where I'm going to meet with the sheriff, and we'll talk through, you know, what this means and how we handle the situation.
Yeah, so. Now Summit County doesn't have one of these agreements, and what I'm hearing from the sheriff is that they will not sign one. The Utah County Commission, however, does have one and held a public hearing before the sheriff signed this 287G. So shouldn't there have been a public hearing in Wasatch County? And why not?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and certainly something we'll be looking into.
Okay, so we should know more after your meeting this afternoon.
I hope so.
Are you aware of the fiscal impacts of the program, such as training for deputies? Because that's something you do oversee, is the budgeting.
Yeah, the budget is certainly an aspect that we're looking at, too, just because we do... The county council appropriates budgets for departments. How they utilize that budget is something that we kind of work with departments over, of how much training we allocate out of their budget and how they utilize those portions. But again, some of those bounds can be wider if the sheriff chooses to prioritize certain things over us. That ends up being a policy discussion between elected officials with my kind of input on that process.
Yeah, so the county council couldn't deny funding for allocating tax taxpayer dollars to the program?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that the county council in the past has ever gone through and appropriated things at a line item level. Typically, we appropriate things at a department level. And really, we haven't had a lot of issue in coordinating with departments when we're talking about specific expenses and ensuring that we are adequately covering the budget of those expenses. And so, again, it's one of the aspects that we're just going to examine a little bit further on what the impacts are and what the appropriate way to proceed is.
All right. Time is closing in on choosing a route for the Heber Valley Bypass Project. Any sense where UDOT is headed there?
I only that they have shared publicly kind of what the current plan is and that they're expected to be able to provide us a copy of the report in the next, I would say, something like two or three months. Mm-hmm. And we have had more discussions about kind of the impacts of some of what the traffic movements look like in certain places. And you know, there has been discussions around what the 1300 South portion of Heber City looks like. And we recently talked about what changed with Highway 113 and Southfield Road out on the west side of Heber City looks like. And I think those are things that UDOT has expressed an interest in looking at when they move from the draft EIS into the final EIS, which will be sometime next year.
Yeah. So at this point, what are the county's biggest questions or concerns as that route decision gets closer?
You know, I think the county council, our most recent statement, I believe it was last year, was expressing support for a bypass. I think we feel like our transportation needs are sufficient, that we do need to address these solutions. But overall, I think the concerns that have been raised are been kind of more in the weeds of, what area of the overpasses and the impacts to the neighboring communities, and what do certain movements look like at certain intersections, and how do you get from one place to another with a project like this? I think some of it has also been grappling with really the scope of such a large project, and with the proposals of these free flow options means that those impacts are kind of amplified, you know, visually and traffic wise and other ways that, you know, I think are gonna have a significant impact on the community. And we just want to make sure that we're carefully examining all of these attributes as much as possible so that UDOT can consider them in this process.
All right. And as predicted, MIDA is making the creep up the hill towards Park City. Are you okay with the latest addition, that 22 acres of Deer Crest into the MIDA project area?
Yeah, one of the good things about our deal with MIDA, we have an interlocal agreement, is that the project area's boundaries have already been established, but not everyone in the project area boundaries are forced to participate. What actually happens is property owners have to opt in to participate within that boundary. So this area was already included in MIDA's project area boundary. Simply, the property owners hadn't opted in to participate in the tax increment financing that MIDA has provided. So what this part nine does is actually just flip that property that's, again, already within the boundary, and now they have the opportunity to participate. Each part has a separate base year. So because they're joining this year, I believe it's last year's property tax assessment will be the base year. So 2024, whatever the base value was, that's the portion the county will continue to collect and all the other entities will continue to collect. And then the increment is calculated from there.
Do you expect MIDA's project boundary to grow at all?
You know, I don't. I think they kind of, this project, I think we're already past kind of the forming stage of it. There was a lot of discussion. We did a little bit of cleanup, I'm gonna say somewhere in like the 2022, 2023 range. We actually kind of gave and took a little bit on the boundaries where we wanted to align better with the parcel lines, that there was a mismatch in which parcels were included and shouldn't have been included. So we had a little bit of cleanup a few years ago, but I don't expect this to change significantly. I think there is still a lot of work to be done. And that's, I think, the phase of the project we're really in is the execution portion of this. Is a lot of the work that we've conducted over the last, you know, approaching decade, at least in Wasatch County, of this investment, this buildup, this planning, and now it's coming to fruition.
Wanted to ask you about the Senate Bill 356. That deadline is coming up to submit new districting maps, but no changes to the law have been made so far to exempt Wasatch County. So are you still holding out for that exemption, or will the county take steps towards complying with the law.
Yeah, actually, we have heard that I think there is an interim committee meeting tomorrow to discuss this very matter about exempting Wasatch County from that. We've heard from our lobbyists and from other state legislators that there is still an appetite to make that change because, again, the deal was from the governor's office that he would not veto it on the condition that the legislature exempt Wasatch County from this. So, again, we feel like this is something that was never intended to apply to Wasatch County, and we think that that will be finalized in the next coming weeks.
Okay. As you mentioned, there is this extraordinary session. I mean, do we know whether or not amendments to 356 will be on that agenda?
Yeah, so the committee meeting that is tomorrow, I believe tomorrow morning, we'll be discussing what the manner of that exemption looks like and how it applies specifically in Wasatch County. I think, again, I said before that if ultimately the state, for whatever reason, goes against their word and their commitment, I think we could scramble and comply with the state code. And I don't think it would be that difficult. We just don't feel like it's necessary when that's been explicitly stated. That's not the intent of the code, and it's their intent to change it so that it does not apply to Wasatch County.
Okay, I should correct myself. It's a House bill, not a Senate bill. Finally, I wanted to ask you, I heard that Heritage Days is being pushed back a year. How come?
I think it was an aggressive timeline to begin with. The plan was to try and do something this September, but I think they wanted to buy a little bit more time in planning and preparation and getting the word out, because really, while we could hold an event, I think they want to be able to do it right, and that means doing a little bit more groundwork, getting some things in place so that we can get the word out and have a better planned event so we can start with a bang. And I think we also hope to take advantage of the America 250 that this next year, celebrating the semi-sesquicentennial of our country, that will be an added emphasis of Wasatch County's role in our nation's history.
Okay. Dustin, anything else you'd like to add?
No, not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. The annual Wasatch Back Walk to End Alzheimer's is set for September 6th here in Park City. On the phone with details, I have the Executive Director for the Utah Chapters of the Alzheimer Association, Stacy Culp, along with Board Chair Ken Barfield. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. I'm going to start with you, Stacy, and tell us about the Walk to End Alzheimer's. What it is and why it's so important.
Sure. Thanks again for having us on this morning. So the Walk to End Alzheimer's is the world's largest event to raise awareness and funds for Alzheimer's disease and all other dementia. We actually hold this event across 600 communities in the fall every year, including 7 walks right here in the state of Utah. And like I said, the reason, you know, it is important is because it does fund our mission. We lead the way to end Alzheimer's and all of the dementia, and we do this by funding critical research, driving risk reduction and early detection, and also maximizing quality care and support. So it's our biggest fundraiser, and it is our biggest way that we rally the communities every fall.
Yeah. How many years has the Utah chapter been organizing the event?
Oh, my goodness. So the Utah chapter, we've been around, gosh, Ken, you might even know this more than me, but I feel like we've been around at least for about 20 years.
Yeah, the association itself started in 1980 nationally, and then the local chapter here is about 20 years. Stacy is the fairly new to Alzheimer's. We were fortunate enough to get her to take over as the executive director here.
So, Stacy, we'll have you tell us, we mentioned September 6th, but where is it happening, what time?
So we're excited this year to have our Park City Walk head to a new location at New Park Park Plaza, and that's due to the generous support of the Crandall Capital Group. So we're going to be kicking off the festivities there in that amphitheater area, and then the walk will take place there along the trail, along the parkway.
Okay, so what can participants kind of expect on the day of the walk? Are there activities, speakers, anything else kind of involved besides the walk?
There is, absolutely. So we start, open up the site about 9 a.m., and that we encourage people to arrive around that time so that they can get their flowers. So we walk with iconic flowers. Each color represents the individual's connection to the cause, to visit the different booths and the sponsors that are supporting us. And we have many this year that we're grateful for there in Park City. So they have time to kind of mingle around, get their flowers, you know, bring their teams together that have been fundraising over the last few months. And then we start with an opening ceremony. And that is a very powerful, touching way that we really come together as a community. And we highlight those different flowers that we walk with. And then we start the walk. So the ceremony lasts only about 15 to 20 minutes, but then we do the walk. And then the other thing that's exciting this year for the Park City Walk is we're going to have live music afterwards. So we're excited to have people join us after they've finished the walk to get to listen to the music for a while.
All right. So do people need to register in advance? I mean, is there a fundraising minimum to be able to join?
We love for people to register in advance, and they can do that just by going to ALV.org, and they can find the Park City Walk. They can also show up on the day of the event. So on September 6th, they can just arrive that morning and get registered. There is no cost to register, and there's not a fundraising minimum. We, of course, encourage people to fundraise. If they fundraise at least $100, they get our walk shirt for this year. But it's all about just joining us as a community. We know this is a very isolating disease, and so it really allows us to bring everybody together.
Yeah. So how much, do you have any idea what the average amount is that an individual might raise?
I think a lot of people actually go for that $100. We always like people to kind of start with their own personal donation, whatever that might be. Could be $5. But a lot of people like to have that shirt just so that they can, you know, be a part of it, but also be able to represent it throughout the year to help spread awareness, because this really is our biggest megaphone to our mission, is the Walk to End Alzheimer's. So I would say on average, people probably raise anywhere from 100 to 250, but we have those rock stars, and we call them champions and our grand champions and elite grand champions. And those are individuals that honestly can raise up to $5,000 and more.
All right. So how much, what's your goal? How much to raise this year, and how would that compare with prior years?
Yeah, we have a great goal this year of raising $191,000. Last year, Park City really rallied and they raised $171,000. So we upped that goal a little bit. We always like to go big. So that's what we're shooting for this year. And we're about halfway to that goal. So we're really excited to just, you know, keep encouraging people. And this is when we really see people kind of kick it into gear with their fundraising as we get closer to walk.
Leslie, to put that in perspective for the question about how much people like to raise, that $191,000 we're going to attempt to raise this year is going to be spread over 400 participants. Last year we had 387. So it's going to be quite a festive crowd at the New Park Amphitheater starting at 9 a.m. in 2.5 weeks on September 6th. So it's going to be quite an atmosphere, and we welcome more people.
Yeah, Kenny, let's talk a little bit. I mean, why is supporting this cause important to you personally?
In 2010, my mother, our mother, lived alone in an apartment in San Francisco. And we, my siblings and I, began to notice a deterioration in her cognitive abilities. And so we were really at a loss of where to turn. We did not know about the Alzheimer's Association, found a social worker, and ultimately she was diagnosed with a form of dementia, Alzheimer's itself, which is the most common form. And we moved her to one of my other sisters' home in Central San Joaquin Valley, where she lived for 5 years. But it takes quite a toll on caregivers. There are over 11 million caregivers in the U.S. caring for roughly 7 million people who've been afflicted. My other sister, who is a school teacher here in Park City, and I moved my mom in 2015 to the Beehive in Highland Estates, and she lived there in a memory care facility until 2018 when she passed. And at that point, actually in 2017, I pushed her in a wheelchair for the Walk to End Alzheimer's, which started at the field house. And then she passed in 2018, and I pushed an empty wheelchair with the iconic flowers that Stacy spoke about. And as a result of that, I got actively involved in the organization and have been since 2020 very actively involved.
Yeah. Stacey, what do you want people to understand about the Alzheimer's crisis? Here in Utah specifically, I think Utah's numbers are on the high side.
They are on the high side. You know, we currently have over 38,000 Utahns that are living with Alzheimer's. And, you know, Ken mentioned the impact of caregivers. We have over 115,000 caregivers, unpaid caregivers. And we know that number is rising, you know, drastically. And we know that that number is going to also increase because we now have a much better way of diagnosing the disease through, and this just came out recently, through blood biomarkers. And so we do expect to see those numbers increase even more. I think what's important for people to know is there's so many assumptions made about this disease. It's just something that you'll get when you're older, right? And that's not the case. So with our numbers growing, it's important for people to know that we actually have two FDA-approved treatments that are going after the disease itself. That's the first time in the history of the disease we actually have treatments that are slowing the progression of the disease. But even more important, and everyone is so active in Park City, which I love, we now know there's things you can do to reduce your risk by up to 40% of getting Alzheimer's. And so this education and the awareness as our population grows, it's important for people to know that, to know what's available for them, the support, the treatment, and of course where these funds are going, but also a greater awareness at a younger age.
Yeah, and so these blood biomarkers, I mean, are we talking just a simple blood test?
Yes, which is hard to believe. And right now it is not, you know, the one and done of the only way that you can diagnose it. Physicians are still using it in conjunction with other means of testing. But we know that these blood biomarkers have over a 90% accuracy rate in diagnosing Alzheimer's. So it's a very, very exciting time. We just came off of our international conference and the Alzheimer's Association put together physician guidelines. So this is brand new, Leslie. It's really exciting, and we know that there's more to come in the pipeline.
Yeah, so would this be part of an annual exam? And the reason I ask that is because we know that Alzheimer's is a long-term progression disease, right? I mean, things that happened 20 years ago for many people. So if you knew now, maybe you could plan ahead?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is something that, you know, we're working on, of course, is like with those guidelines, right? Is not only for the guidelines for the physicians, but for people to know, you know, when to be asking those questions of their physician that they might want to be able to take that test. But we have, you know, 10 warning signs on our website. We now have 10 healthy habits for your brain. So there's a lot of, you know, proactive things that people can be doing to even just have an idea of what they can do to lower their risk. But then if there starts to be some concerns, some great resources available to just give people the initial guidance and understanding of the disease.
Leslie, to drive the point home, here in Utah, there are roughly 350,000 residents over the age of 65 in Utah. One in three seniors is expected to die of Alzheimer's or another related dementia. Alzheimer's is the fourth leading cause of death in this state, as well as the rest of the U.S., but cardiovascular cancer accidents all exceed. But Alzheimer's is the fourth leading cause, and more people die from Alzheimer's or other related dementia than breast cancer and prostate cancer put together.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. Kenny, how has the board worked to kind of engage more of the Utah community in recent years? As you mentioned, you've got, I think, 7 walks here in the state.
Yeah, it's really important for us to serve as ambassadors for the organization. The staff is nationally funded as well as locally funded, but most importantly, our board members serve as advisors in many capacities. We've got 2 PhD university professors who are conducting Alzheimer's research. We've got a number of professional people, other people from all walks of life. Almost universally, everybody has a connection directly to Alzheimer's. But as ambassadors, we raise awareness, foster consciousness, encourage our communities to support, and we reach out just to make sure that people know that there really are resources available, which my family and I didn't have in 2010, but they exist, and they're a really strong resource network here in the state.
Yeah. And Stacey, how is the money raised? How is that spent? Is it, does it stay right here in the state?
So through the funds raised for Walk to End Alzheimer's, it is kind of our biggest funder for the organization as a whole. And so what that allows us to do is direct those funds through those various areas that we're focusing on with our mission, right? Research and care and support, et cetera, which allows us on the local front to provide a lot of the education, fund some local research. So we're one big organization and grateful for the fact that the funds do allow us to actually pour more resources into the state than maybe what our initial seven walks raise here on the local front. But having said that, our seven walks do bring in, our goal is over $500,000 this year. So what people are doing on the local front absolutely supports everything that we do here in the Utah chapter.
Okay. How do people register?
The easiest way is honestly just to go to the website, alz.org. And from there, once you log into that, you're going to immediately see information about the Walk to End Alzheimer's. People can put in their zip code. They can find the Park City Walk. We call the walk the Summit Wasatch County Walk because we want to kind of incorporate that whole area. But again, there's no cost to register. It is an incredible event that really brings the community together, and we would love to have everybody join us this year on September 6th.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, if anybody has an interest in the walk and they're not quite sure what to do, I will have a team myself again this year to celebrate my mother. Leona's Sunshine Army is how she was referred to, and people are welcome to join me, but there are several other people that would welcome you as a team member, and we can provide you with all the guidance and help you need.
Okay, and if people don't want to walk, they can certainly just donate.
Absolutely.
Okay, Stacey, Kenny, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
Studio now with an update from Recycle Utah. I have Education Director Mary Klosser along with Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is back to school week. Mary, maybe you can talk to us a little bit what you have planned for this school year as Education Director.
Well, kind of the same old. We try to hit most of the grades, kindergarten through ninth grade. Our goal is to kind of get as many taps as we can with the kids. So rather than, you know, teaching them one 45-minute lesson a year, if we could get three 45-minute lessons a year on different topics, that's our goal. And Chelsea, joining the education team, has been instrumental in letting us do that because we are hitting a lot more students now.
Great. How many kids do you get to?
What is the number, Chelsea?
Last school year, we taught 6,100 kids in Summit County.
Wow.
And that could be multiple times with different lessons. But 6,100 students got different lessons.
Yeah, so do you hit all of the schools in Summit County then?
We hit all of the Park City School District schools, K through 5, and then we get to South Summit, North Summit, Wylaman some, and Park City Day School, sometimes some of the Montessori schools, sometimes we get 3- and 4-year-olds. We try to get to as many schools as we can with as many topics as we can.
Yeah, well, talk to me a little bit, what sort of things do they learn about?
Everything from appreciation of Mother Earth and recycling and composting to water and energy conservation and climate change and food systems. Chelsea can talk a little bit about middle school, some of the amazing lessons she's been designing.
Yeah, so when I got here 2 years ago, this will be my third school year, I guess, with Recycle Utah. We wanted to expand more into middle schools, so right now we have a sixth grade lesson on population and natural resource availability, and then we also have a seventh grade lesson on mining and sustainable mining and the future of mining and electrification. And then we're hoping that we can expand even more into middle school now that the eighth graders are going to be at Ecker. It'll be a lot easier to reach them than at Treasure. And so we're going to try and design a lesson on renewable energy and another lesson on the science of recycling this year for middle schoolers at Ecker.
Okay. Sounds like you also made it to several camps this summer.
Yes, we love our camps. We hit probably 5, 6, 7 camps, YMCA, Basin Rec, Park City School District, And again, all these different topics, very hands-on, get the kids moving. We reached about 1,000 kids this summer. And yeah, it's really good fun in the summer.
Okay. Mary, you also oversee the Green Business Program. Maybe just give us an overview of it and what it hopes to achieve.
You've got it. In the past, Recycle Utah has run the Green Business Program for probably 9 or 10 years, but maybe 3 years ago, we transitioned to a collaboration between the City, County, Chamber, and Community Foundation. So now we have 5 entities working the program, and we are in the process of transitioning it to the county. The program now it's a lot more impactful. In the past, it was easier to join the program. Now there is absolutely no greenwashing involved. If you are a green business, you are truly a green business and you are earning it. So we got up to 110 businesses in the past. We have completely started it over, and you have to certify. And right now we have 5 businesses officially certified. We really are in the early stages, but we have maybe 10 that are on the horizon that are trying to get certified. So, you know, ideally if we could get 20 certified by the end of this year, and it'll just be a slow process because it's harder to do it, to be honest.
Yeah. So you said you're turning it over to the county?
Yeah. We hired a consultant to help us figure out. We had so many cooks in the kitchen that, you know, who is the best organization to run it in the future? And the winner was the county, really public health department, which is a great landing place, I feel. So it's really exciting because, you know, we know my long-term vision for this program has been if you are a visitor here or if you are a local, there'll be a list of green businesses to choose from for all your services, and it will be a trustworthy list. You know that if you're going to this restaurant or this dry cleaner or this spa, that they are green. So that is the long-term vision.
Yeah, what are some examples maybe of local businesses that have made significant changes through the program?
Well, the 5 that are currently certified are Done, actually 6, Done to Your Taste Catering, Chesley Electric, Fulfilled Lifestyle & Co., Residents at the UOP, Basin Recreation, and Summit County Health.
So have you seen a kind of a shift in attitudes from local business owners when it comes to sustainability as a result of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, so many businesses want to be doing the right thing, and, you know, it can save money and it's better for the environment, of course, and customers are asking for this. So they want to, but they're overwhelmed with how to get started. So that's why we're here as a resource to help them get started. And there's, you know, lengthy checklists. They get points for their actions, all categories, transportation, energy, water, waste, et cetera. So, you know, it's very comprehensive.
Yeah. So what is the process then for a business to get involved? And is there a cost associated with it?
No cost. It's free. And they simply need to go to the website Park City Green.
Okay, mm-hmm. So when does that handover to the county happen, or has it already happened?
We're transitioning to that. Eventually, a coordinator will be hired to run the program, and hopefully that will happen by early in the year.
Okay. Chelsea, let's talk about some upcoming events. What's happening first here?
So we just had our 10th 100-mile meal on Saturday, and it was so lovely. So if you came to that, thank you so much. We had such a good time. The two that I'll talk about, we have our special Colville Hazmat Day on Saturday, September 13th, from 10 to 2, and that's only for Colville residents, but we'll be taking hazardous materials, not batteries or electronics, but there's a full list on our website, and that is on the 13th for Colville residents only. That's the final part of our special USDA grant for special events in Colville.
Where's that going to be?
That's going to be at the Ledges Event Center.
Right. Okay.
And then our normal Summit County Hazmat Day is on the 27th, September 27th from 9 to 1, and that's going to be at the Silver King lot again this year because of the construction in the Cabriolet lot. And that's for any Summit County residents. We don't accept any business waste, but again, the full list of materials that we're taking for that hazmat day is on our website.
Okay, Silver King Lot there at the base of kind of Park City Mountain. And again, the list of acceptable things to drop off
Recycleutah.org.
Okay. Mary, you also have an upcoming green drink. Tell me about this.
Well, the green drinks, that's kind of my baby. I love this program so much. The adult education, Chelsea and I teach so many kids that it's really wonderful to be able to reach adults too, because we also need to learn these things. So we have a different topic every time. The next one's at Summit Community Gardens on September 9th. You can register on our website, recycleutah.org. It's 6 to 8 p.m. and we're going to be celebrating our local farmers. We expect anywhere from 50 to 100 people to bring your own, and we will have a few speakers from U.S. Department of Agriculture and talking about the Farm Bill and, you know, basically food systems in Utah and how important it is to frequent our local farmers, go to farmers markets, CSAs, et cetera. So that's that one in September, and then we also have one in November, November 11th. Wow, 9-9 and 11-11, that's a first. This one's at Park City Mountain Resort, and the focus will be on waste because the Park City does such a wonderful job with their waste systems.
Okay, is there a cost to attend?
No, the Summit Community Gardens will be free, and I believe Park City Mountain Resort will have no cost either. We do have to charge sometimes when we have to pay for the food and drink through Recycle Utah.
Okay. You've also got some tours coming up. Tell me about those.
Love the tours. I'm a visual learner. I think many people are. So we have Spoiled Soil, our composting organization here, where a lot of our composting is getting hauled in Browns Canyon. That's on September 16th, 10 a.m. The landfill and over by Wanship is on September 23rd, 10 a.m. Summit Basin Water Reclamation District on October 9th, 10 a.m. And Three Kings Water Treatment Plant, which is always a very popular one, on October 16th, 9:30 a.m. So, yeah, we have a lot of, we do spring, summer, and fall tours now, and they are getting very popular, sometimes selling out.
Okay. Let's see. So are these events kind of geared more toward education, action, community engagement, all of the above?
I'd say 100% education.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else that you wanted to let people know about?
No.
No?
I think we're good.
How can people stay up to date on kind of all those events? Do you do newsletter?
Chelsea is doing all our communications, and she's doing an amazing job. So I think anyone can simply go to our website at any time and or give us a call.
You also can follow us on social media on Facebook or Instagram. And then all of this is posted there. But all of our events are on our events page on our website.
Okay. Mary Closter, Chelsea Hafer, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Leslie.